It's all my fault. I drove Spider-Man away.
He was the only one who could have stopped Octavius.
Yes. Spider-Man was a hero. I just couldn't see it. He was a thief! A criminal!
He stole my suit! He's a menace to the entire city! I want that wall-crawling arachnid prosecuted! I want him strung up by his web! I want Spider-Man!
That's right, more pictures of Spider-Man. We want more pictures of Spider-Man here, because everything is Spidey on Everything is Super, the post-show recap superhero spot. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by Kevin Mahadeo, who's bellowing, "Listen to me!
Listen to me now!" At least I'm bellowing that and not something I forgot, which is the Darth Vader-esque, "No!" That scene, as much as I'm going to talk about this movie and how much I liked it, that moment, the scene was like, there's a lot of, that was really good up until it wasn't, but.
All right. Well, we're coming in hot. Spider-Man 2, it's the second Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's how numbers work, I believe. I believe it goes Spider-Man, then Spider-Man 2.
And there's going to be several Spider-Man 2s, as we've already done Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, there's three Spider-Man 2s, three Spider-Man 2 to discuss. We've talked about one of them before, the last of the Spider-Man 2. Now we're talking about the first of the Spider-Man 2, which is titled Spider-Man 2. We're talking about it here on Post Show Recaps. As we are talking about all things Spider-Man for the next several weeks, we are swinging through the Spideyverse. And this is the best Spider-Man movie ever.
Okay.
It's Spider-Man 2, the greatest superhero movie of all time, the best Spider-Man by far. And if you don't know that and you don't see it and you don't feel in your bones that Spider-Man 2 is the best Spider-Man movie ever and the best superhero movie of all time, or at least of its time, then you are hollow inside and there's just something broken inside of you. And I can tell you that that's true because it's me that I'm describing.
You are the broken
I'm
one,
the one.
For sure.
I'm the broken one. So Kevin is wound up and ready to go because in the post-show recaps patron Discord, around 3 a.m. on the East Coast, around midnight Kevin's time, Kevin dropped a message in the post-show recaps patron Discord, which you could become a member of by signing up at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Think about it. Fun times happening there. I saw this message from Kevin that said, "Spider-Man 2, you guys, it's real good. It's real good. I can't wait to tell you everything. It's real good." And I had just finished watching Spider-Man 2 a little while before that. And I was like, "Spider-Man 2, it's good."
No, that's not the word you use, Joshua Wiggler.
I said it's fine. I said it's just fine. And mostly to agitate you, because I figured it would probably agitate you. Kevin, my take is that I think Spider-Man 2 is a good movie. I enjoyed it. It's a good movie. But there is this discourse about Spider-Man 2 that it is like this transcendent movie, and I need help. Am I broken? Is there something wrong with me?
I think maybe there might be something wrong with you, but not in the way that we're describing here. I just like, I hadn't seen this movie in a while, and I actually went in expecting it to not like it that much from my memory. I honestly went in expecting it to be overwrought and just too much, a lot of just like teen angst. And it definitely had some of that, but
it has a lot of that.
It does. It has a decent amount of it. And I think
it has so much of that.
Yeah, but not,
it's filled with that.
Yeah. But at the same time, like not to the point that it ruined anything for me. Because I came out of it being very impressed with the how it was done structurally, the plot they portrayed, what they actually, I think, improved drastically with Peter Parker in this movie. I think thematically, it's really, really good. I think Doc Ock is a great villain. I honestly think Doc Ock is probably the best Spidey villain. Not this particular incarnation, but I think Doc Ock as a villain might be the best Spidey villain. And Alfred Molina does such a good job, I think, with the balance between some over-the-top moments, like the Listen to Me Now, which is not even that over-the-top, and having a bit more pathos behind him and connection to Peter in a way that felt natural. All that stuff, I think, worked so well together to create a movie, especially of the time, I think, is very important as we're going to have this discussion, to be the best superhero movie of its era. Next to X-Men 2 is probably what I'd say. And I came away, like, obviously the movie isn't perfect, but it's to me, it was really good. They did a lot in there that I think worked and worked for who Peter Parker is and worked for the character of Spider-Man. And just had like good comedy. Like, sure, you can pick some nits, but especially in terms of looking at it compared to the first movie, this is just, it's a better film. And I think to me, that's not even debatable. And you can debate it if you want, but I think you're wrong. But yeah, I do think, you know, that's my stance. And there's a lot of reasons I can point to. There's a lot more we can go into detail, but I'm always curious because, you know what? We came into this and you know, I understand you're also just like, you want to be illuminated. You want to be shown the light. But I also think it's like, why do I got to be the one to defend my... Tell me your position.
I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you to defend
it. I
want to
know
it.
Why,
I'm asking,
Josh,
you to help. I'm asking... See, you're coming at this from like a vantage point of you want to fight. I don't want to fight you. I want... I'm coming to you as a broken bird. Mend my wing. I'm not asking you to defend anything. I'm asking you to help me.
The typical Harry Osborn to my Peter Parker.
No, you're Harry. You're Harry in this situation. I just want us to be friends. I just want us to get past this. You want to kill. You want to kill the person who's insulted your movie.
No, but like legit question though. Like so. What is it, I guess, from your perspective?
We'll get into
like,
it.
Where are we? Let's trade back and forth some information here.
Let's do this. Let's trade some information. Let's see if we can find out who done it. Before we do all of that, because we've got a lot to dig into, I want to take a quick second here and thank our sponsor for this episode of Post Show Recap. Support for today's episode comes from Progressive Insurance. Fun fact, Progressive customers qualify for an average of 6 discounts when they sign up for Progressive auto insurance. Discounts for things like enrolling in automatic payments, insuring more than one car, going paperless, and of course, being a safe driver. Plus, customers who bundle their auto with home or add renter's insurance save an average of 12% on their auto. There's so many ways to save when you switch, and once you're a customer with Progressive, you get unmatched claim service with 24/7 support online or by phone. It's no wonder why more than 20 million drivers trust Progressive and why they've recently climbed to the third largest auto insurer in the country. So get a quote online at progressive.com in as little as 5 minutes and see how much you could be saving. Auto insurance from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Home and renter's insurance not available in all states, provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations. Kevin, speaking of Otto, because we got to talk about Otto Octavius.
Dr. Octopus.
Yeah,
terrible.
Sorry. Yeah. What was it? Like the Sinister Squid? I forget.
Sinister Squid. What about Doctor Strange? Oh, it's good. It's taken.
No, that's taken. It's taken. So, I mean, already, by the way, picked up on that this time around. I was like, are we connecting all this?
I hope so. I really do hope so.
I want to believe that like Kevin Feige was watching Spider-Man 2 and was like, oh shit, that's right. I forgot that Doctor Strange gets name checked. Oh, this all works. And so I hope that when we get into Spider-Man 3 in the MCU or Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, J. Jonah Jameson says that line and it gets re-edited and Doctor Strange just like walks into the room.
I mean,
like sling rings his way into that continuity.
Kevin Feige did produce this film, so he might have done it himself to be like, I am putting a loophole in here for the future. Yeah. You know, future Kevin Feige came to talk to past Kevin Feige and was like, listen.
So here's where I'm at. Here's where I'm at is, you know, I think Spider-Man 1, the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man on our scale, our Sinister Six scale, I gave a 4.5, I believe, and I gave it that extra 0.5 with a nostalgia boost. I don't have the same nostalgia associated with Spider-Man 2. I was a little older when it came out. It didn't strike me quite as new. It didn't have Willem Dafoe, at least not nearly as much as I needed him. And there was nothing like
that was massively transcendent for me about Spider-Man 2. And I think also because there has been like this overwhelming voice in the room about Spider-Man 2, like the tentacles whispering in all of your ears, that Spider-Man 2 is just by far and away the, wait for it, superior Spider-Man, that I think that annoyed me. It's like, what did I miss? What did I miss that makes this like the decisively better movie versus the first Spider-Man? Because I think my take is, if I take off my nostalgia glasses for the first Spider-Man and I put that back at a 4, I think Spider-Man 2 is just as good. I think that they are just as good. I think that there are elements of Spider-Man 2 that are definitely better, without question. The action is absolutely better in this. There's just no doubt about that the action is better put together. It feels higher budget. It feels more polished. The sequences are more thought out, even if it's still a little frustrating on a New York City level. You know, there are some things about that are a little annoying, but it's done better. I think Sam Raimi is freer to embrace his Raimiisms. The Dr. Octopus wakes up on the operating table scene is tremendous.
It's amazing.
And just as fun as I remembered. Absolutely. And there are other things that there's some moments that Raimi like is feeling himself a little bit and is like allowing himself the confidence to really go for. Where, for example, he's like the scene where Peter shows up and Bruce Campbell won't let him in, and everything's just like going on like a beat longer than it feels like it should. Or Peter Parker gets his groove back and he drops from so many heights and he starts complaining about his back for like 2 minutes. Or even the elevator scene, which takes so long. He's in that elevator for so long that I appreciate that, because that's what I love about Sam Raimi as a filmmaker. He's really funny in that way, and he really pushes the line. And I feel like he pushed the line really, really well with all of that stuff. But I think that is like, those are all things that like I would say at least exist in the first Spider-Man movie, if not are done quite as well. And I just feel like the first Spider-Man is more classic than Spider-Man 2. I don't know that I feel like the same like classic vibe from Spider-Man 2. Like, I think like the entire Mary Jane story arc is basically, they're extending like the final funeral scene from Spider-Man 1 across an entire movie here. Like, only one thing really had to change, and it changes, and it takes an entire movie for that to move. So like that whole storyline falls a little flat for me. I guess I just don't really connect with Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus, and that's a serious barrier for entry. And I know I'm in a huge minority on that. I totally recognize that. I absolutely understand. That's why I'm saying something's wrong. I'm broken somehow, Kevin. I need help.
Help
me, Peter.
It's too real for you, maybe. Alfred Molina, the science dad.
I know. So I was talking to the great Jessica Lise in the Discord. Jess was like, Dr. Ock, with, I believe, a scalding take, Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2 is the greatest supervillain on screen of all time, which I think is a scorching take.
It is a hot,
personally,
hot take.
It's a hot take, but I love the spice. And I had that eureka moment as well, where I was like, you know what? As the son of a very intimidating super scientist, there might be a reason I couldn't connect with Doc Ock, because it's a little too close to home for me. But I can't really push past that. I guess maybe it's because of that. Maybe there are other things too. Like, I don't really, I need to be shown the way on like Peter's losing a grip on his powers as a storyline that's anything other than cheesy. Like, I need to be shown the way on that. Yeah, help me.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I need assistance. It's not coming from any place of like, you're all crazy, you're all nuts. It's coming from a place of like, I don't get it. I just need to see it. I think it's a perfectly good, fun movie, but there are people who talk about Spider-Man 2 as though it's just like the greatest thing that's happened to the superhero space, and I don't see it at all.
All right. Well, so there's a lot here. There's a lot. I think that I do think that, you know, from my POV, I think part of it is just if you don't like, it's not even the Doc Ock is the reason. I think there's that, but I think it would be a weird argument to say you connected to Willem Dafoe as opposed to you were entertained by Willem Dafoe, which is a fair thing. But I think, like, sure, to say that Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin is any sort of better villain in terms of, like, what an actual villain and antagonist should be is a bit of a crazy talk. Like, I love that, like, portrayal. But this also comes down to the root of Spider-Man 1 versus Spider-Man 2. And the root of the issue, I think, is that Spider-Man 2 actually tells you a story and shows you a story and has characters that develop and change and reflect what they're actually supposed to be. As opposed to Spider-Man 1, which continuously just kept telling you things. Like, it just kept telling you that Harry is Peter's best friend, that MJ and Peter were neighbors and lifelong friends as well, that Willem Dafoe's Harry, or Norman Osborn, was like a father to Peter, and Peter was like a son to him. None of that stuff is portrayed. Every action in Spider-Man 1 is a contrary action to, like, what they're telling you on face value. And it's not good storytelling, like, when people do that, the actual inner motivations being different from what they say. It's just sloppy writing. This movie, to start off, I'll start with the character part, right? This movie, at least, when it comes to Harry and MJ specifically, what they're acting as and saying as characters make a lot of sense. Like, in this movie, let's start with Harry. Harry portrayed, and we're told, like, hey, we used to be friends, but now we're very clearly not anymore. We had a falling out, and there is a huge amount of tension between us. And everything we see emphasizes that point. In the first movie, it's just they kept saying they're friends. They don't really act like friends. Nothing they do supports the theory that they are friends. And you're allowed in this movie to say, like, hey, we used to be friends, because that's a backstory element that's allowed to exist. You don't have to flashback to show that. We're talking about from this story. And everything about the Harry and Peter stuff, I think, actually works in this one because of that aggression, because of that tension. Again,
how about Harry slapping
Peter?
I
love that scene.
Does that work?
I think it honestly does. Like, I've been to a point like that where maybe I've gotten into a friend situation. We've gotten into, like, a heated argument, and, like,
are you about to tell everybody about the time you and I got into a slap fight?
Yeah, right? In the middle of the Hyatt Hotel. No, I don't think we've ever done that. But, like, the slap scene, honestly, I think worked. Like, just because, like,
it's more realistic than, like, we're about to, like very, like, macho-ly punch each other in the face.
Exactly.
Makes a lot more sense that he would just, like, kind of, like, the hesitant, like, light slap.
Yeah, and I think that's why it works for me. I felt... You can actually see the actions that are happening. As for the MJ thing, you're talking about the MJ falling flat in this one. I do think the MJ Peter storyline is the weakest part of this one. But the MJ and Peter storyline was also trash in the first one and was the emphasis of the first one. That's the other problem, is that was the big emphasis in the first one.
It's an emphasis here, too. No, it's the book ending, right?
It
once again starts with MJ and ends with MJ.
That is correct. But this movie isn't about that relationship, which we'll get that. That part of it, I'll get to my second point, which does connect. But as far as the MJ stuff, again, it works because we're being shown what they're actually saying. In the first movie, this idea of just, like, we used to be so close and we were friends and, you know, now I like you. And, like, that sort of stuff-ish in the first movie, but not really, again, told. This, it is established that, hey, one of us confessed our feelings to the other and the other one was like, no. And it's created a really bad problem between us that we can't kind of be around each other. And everything they do emphasizes that fact from their conversations. That phone call, I think, actually does work really well, where MJ is listening to him leave the message. I think their argument after the show, when he does lose his powers and they have that, like, fight, felt very real. As a person who's been very close to a situation like that about unrequited feelings and just also being a fucking goober weirdo, I definitely understood that. And all of that, I think, again, it showed you what they were feeling without having to overly tell you it. They actually did the rule of storytelling. And that can circle back to the other big point, which is why I think this movie is superior to the original. The thematic element of this, again, in the showing, not telling, the first movie, the first line, like with everything in the first movie, they have to tell you the thesis statement, but even fails at that because this is a story about a girl. No, it wasn't. Like, that wasn't that movie at all. And so it failed terribly, even in its thesis statement that I felt the need to say. This movie doesn't, it says the thesis statement, but not in a way as a voiceover to the audience, because this movie, almost more than any other Spider-Man film, is about great power and great responsibility. That is the heart of this movie.
It's Spider-Man no more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even the Peter and MJ stuff, yes, it's a big part of it, but it also serves as an element to the bigger thematic purpose, which is great power, great responsibility. This movie showed us the struggle of Peter Parker having to cope with being in Spider-Man so well. Like, he gets beaten down a lot and you feel bad for him. Like, there's many times where I'm just like, just stop being Spider-Man, dude. And you understand why he's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. You get it. You understand when he gets to that point. And it's great to be there because as a person looking on the meta, you want to be like, no, you have to be Spider-Man. But you look at what his life is and you're just like, oh, don't do this, bro. And sometimes it is a little bit much. He does get too beaten down and like it's leaning a little towards the pathetic part. And maybe that's where I think it does falter in terms of like their Peter Parker portrayal. But thematically, again, it all tracks. It all
Toby
makes
really
sense.
Toby really leans into that. He really leans into the, I think really deliberately leans into like the goobery patheticness of Peter
Parker.
It's
true, but this movie, and you know, so that's the thematic part. And lastly, let's hit on the Peter Parker part of it, right? I do think this is a phenomenal Peter Parker. There is goober moments, but it feels way less than the previous ones. He's beaten down more than he is goobery. The most goobery moment to me, though, and I, Jesus, was where he starts.
He can't get a word out, folks. He can't do it.
He starts reciting poetry to her, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Get out of it. Stop it. Like, that is uber goober right there. Yeah. It's bad. Yeah. And then his line about, like, I always imagine you get married on a hilltop. What? You fucking weirdo. It. Don't tell her that.
Yeah. But who are you getting married to?
Right.
You hadn't decided yet.
Like, those are the moments he does get goobery, but this Peter Parker, like the beaten down part, I think does work. He veers on the pathetic part, sure. Honestly, I do think when he does lose his powers and it's as Peter gets his groove back, he's great. And that should be normal. Like, Peter Parker is allowed to be that and still be beaten down. Like, he didn't even look like a goober. He actually looked pretty good. He was like dressed in like good clothes. His glasses worked for him. His hair looked good. Like, Peter Parker, like, as Tobey Maguire, as Peter Parker, and certainly, like, as a vision of Peter Parker at that time period, was spot freaking on. Like, I was like, yeah, that's how Peter Parker looks. And, like, he's allowed to be smart in class, and, like, the struggle can still work. So, Tobey Maguire also better in this movie as Spider-Man, and wasn't so goobery as he was in the previous one. So there's a lot there that I think really, really works, and makes this movie, I think, better than the first one, just in terms of a film. I think, like, just on that merit alone, in terms of a movie and having a theme and having characters and everything, structurally works really well. And the acting, I think, of Tobey Maguire solid. I think James Franco is actually pretty good. And I came in...
Franco's good, yeah.
I came in ready to be like, ooh, Kirsten Dunst. But, like, her character had problems with it, because, and to me, it was the writing. But, like, the scenes where she's shown, like, I talked about that phone call earlier. Like, when she gives that look where she waits for him to, like, put the money back to continue talking, and he does it, and she kind of, like, gives that, like, dismiss, like, you know, like, scoff and, like, turns away, I thought was actually a really solid acting moment, very subtle. Her argument with him in the street after the movie is really good. I do think character-wise she has a ton of issues, but that's just a problem with the character and not so much, you know, her in that role. I remember being like, oh, Kirsten Dunst slept through this role. She did it. She had her moments. Every now and then she felt like, oh, you're not really carrying it. But, like, I think that's also part of the problem with the character, and probably partner with the writing. But yeah, I mean, all those aspects of it, I think, definitely make this a better movie. And as far as a superhero movie about needing to be a superhero, like, it's there. It's there better than most.
Would you say it is vastly better than the first one?
Structurally, yes. Like,
sure, structurally, yeah, but, like, your feels about Spider-Man 2 versus Spider-Man 1, are they just so much bigger?
I mean, that's the thing. I think this is where it comes down to, Josh. And I feel like this was the last point here in terms of the arguments of where we stand on this movie, and we can get into the nitty-gritty of the film itself. Is that I think you are allowed to say, in terms of feels and emotion, I do think this movie is way stronger. This has, I think, a lot more emotional aspects. Even the one emotional aspect that they tried to ham fist in there that doesn't fully work to me still kind of actually works on this rewatch. But
which one is that?
The train, dude. Which we'll talk about that scene. We'll talk about that scene.
Sure. But I actually thought the train worked better for me.
Same.
This time
that's what I'm saying. I actually
before.
Think the train scene worked better for me. And I think the Aunt May scene where she's actually talking to him, while yes, in a Sam
Raimi.
Oh,
the Aunt May scene is really
those
good.
Emotional parts work really well. The most emotional part in the first one is literally Uncle Ben dying, which is the thing that happens in almost every Spider-Man movie. But the other thing is this. If the question is, did you, Josh Wigler, like and were more entertained by the first movie than the second, acceptable.
Yeah.
That is the discussion I had, though. I think I said this in our first podcast. That is my Twilight Breaking Dawn argument. You're allowed to say
right.
you are way more entertained by this film, but you also have to acknowledge another one is a better film. You and I sure. love Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi, I think you and I talked about as our favorite of the original trilogy. But
yeah,
The Empire Strikes Back, I can admit, is a better movie structurally. Like, it's a better film. But we like that one more. I think it's allowed for you to say that you like the first movie better. You were entertained by the first movie. Sure. But like, looking at them as films, looking at them as Spider-Man stories, looking at them as something that is telling an arc with a character, to me, there's zero question that the second film is a better movie.
Cool. I think you made an incredibly great argument. I think all of those points are really well taken. I think especially on the structure level, I think on the idea that this movie is going deeper than the first one, that it's like aiming for more, that, you know, this movie, much like Peter Parker in Spider-Man 2, is like webbing the sides of a window frame and winding up backwards so that he could just effectively slingshot himself towards a point. I think that this movie is doing that. And I think it is really aiming at this idea of like the totality of the weight of what it costs to be in a position to affect change and how that can feel, exhausting and so tiring, and there's no room for yourself in any of that. And testing that question, can there be room for yourself in that? Can there be can you have multitudes? Do you have to be just one thing if you are so uniquely situated to be that one thing? Or can you also like pizza and take naps or do whatever? You know, like I think that the movie is setting that up well. I think that the movie, certainly in the imagery towards the end of the film, that the final task that Spider-Man has, it's no coincidence that it's literally holding weight, holding impossible weight. I see all of that. I totally do. And I think that that stuff all works. And I acknowledge it. And I acknowledge the position that for me, Spider-Man 1 is the movie that entertains me more and that I enjoy more. And I accept the position that Spider-Man 2 is a structurally better movie that is aiming for more. I also just don't know that for me, like it's hitting that stuff at a level that requires like raves about it. Like I guess there's still just like something that I'm missing in terms of it not landing with me that I think is, I really thought that it was going to happen this time. And for whatever reason, it didn't. And I think that it's a personal issue. I think that like a lot of like the gooberisms of this movie maybe like stand in the way of me being able to like take it very seriously. And I think that it's a film that people have taken very seriously. And that's just not something that's ever been able to happen for me. You articulating those points is illuminating. This is what I want. This is what I'm after. And I really appreciate all of that. And I think that that's super valid. And I'm happy for anyone who can like without any roadblocks can divine that from this movie, that they get that experience right away. I wish it didn't have to be explained to me, but you know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens.
I mean, we're also people from a heavy comic book background, right? Like the idea of like a superhero needs to be a superhero or else they, you know, they struggle in their real life, et cetera, consequences. It's something we've seen many times told to us in stories and comic books over and over again, right? So like the message even delivered is not necessarily new to us. But for me, I do think even now it is still one of the best told versions of that, possibly even including a lot of comics. There's not a lot of comics that handle that stuff really well. They do a lot of the like, oh, let's make up reasons that life is difficult for, you know, the superhero so that he can't give up his mantle. But this one I feel like is so natural. Like it actually felt real. I actually understood where Peter was coming from. I understood where he was going, you know, what he was going through. Again, there's a little more goobery than I would like. I think Peter Parker is allowed to be more of the Peter Parker we saw in the middle of the movie than he is throughout the rest of it. But I think, again, encapsulating that era of storytelling, I think that's the other thing, too. This particular era of how these stories are told, I think it's the best version of that. I think this is a very specific time period where drama is freaking high. And, you know, that sort of stuff is very high. And this encapsulates it so well in terms of what it is. I mean, like, for me, you know, not to jump too far ahead into the ending here, but like, I do think this is, I think, like I said, next to X2, it is the best superhero movie of its era. And I think the only faults in this movie to me are faults of the time period.
Yeah. I think that those are, I don't think that that's invalid though. You know, if a movie feels old and like it's meeting you where you are now and it's just not like, you know, measuring up to like similar stories in this space that have done this better. You know, if it's a graded scale, you know, that's a different story. I want to dig into the villain because it's such an important piece of this. I think your point of like, are you connecting with the Green Goblin? Cause if so, can we hop offline and talk that through? Are you okay? You know, I think it's like a worthy position as my friend, and I appreciate that. What are the ways in which, cause this is the most helpful way for me to process, is to ask you some questions.
Yeah, sure.
Like, what are the ways in which you feel the Dr. Octopus story in Spider-Man 2 is markedly different from the Green Goblin story in Spider-Man 1?
Well, one, we actually, again, get to see the actual things that they kept telling us in Spider-Man 1 is true. We get Peter meeting Doc Ock. We get them actually conversing, bonding on a level of being people who have science. We get a big part of it into the theme of the villains.
Once.
Yeah, we have that. But that one scene, right? Like
one time.
Yeah.
One time.
Still, way more than we got in the first one.
And Doc Ock is rather dismissive of him as if he's being, interviewed by like a ninth grader.
Correct. And when Peter shows the fact that he is an intelligent person, as they converse, they end up spending hours together. They end up having that long conversation. They talk about the gift of intelligence and everything like that. And there's never a point in the movie, though, where Doc Ock overly acts too protective of Peter. That would have, I think, equated more than what they were giving us. Like, if they had it where Doc Ock was just like, I can't go after Peter Parker. That kid's like a son to me after one conversation. That's psychotic. Instead, he was like, Harry said, go get Peter Parker. Hey, please don't hurt him. And Doc Ock was like, sure, I'm going to throw this car at him. Whatever. I don't give a shit. And I think that's fine. For a guy who only had one conversation with Peter, that's fine. But they had a moment where they talked about the importance of intelligence, and Peter was able to use that to his advantage at the end to remind him, hey, man, you told me this. If this is who you are, then, like, you know, cowboy the F up here. And I think that works in terms of that relationship in this movie. Other instances of Doc Ock get a lot deeper and they expand further on that relationship. And I think they do it to, and this is what makes Doc Ock such a good villain. A great example is the Spider-Man video game that I have raved about. I think that does a great job of portraying Doc Ock in that way. But that's the connection,
sure,
that I think works here. And you also see Doc Ock as a person who kind of lost his mind, but in a way that wasn't so just like, oh, yes, the rats went insane. And you're just like, is that where we are right now? The rats? Okay. It's not like a level of insanity that's so cartoonish. And I think that works here. Again, like, he's clearly...
That's a divide for me, because I don't that's not convincing for me on the not cartoonish. Doc Ock has a bunch of artificially intelligent tentacles plugged into his brainstem that have been fried, that have now taken over, uh-huh, effectively, and he talks to, uh-huh, them. That's very cartoonish.
That is like, that's not the cartoonish part I'm talking about. The cartoonish is, I'm talking about the level of villainous insanity. This is, he had a mental break, but that mental break still fits and tracks into the personality and psychology that we establish. He's a person who is so sure about his own intelligence, like Dr. Doom, that he was determined to believe from these tentacles that are saying like, hey man, you didn't mess up the calculations that happened. Like, clearly something else went wrong. You were correct in what you did. And he's like, yeah, I was correct. That's all reasonable. That's not going to, you know, from just like, oh yes, I'm the leader of a businessman here doing this, to, aha, out am I? Do you know what I've sacrificed? Like, that's cartoonish, yeah, villainy, dude. Come on. So Long, Other Man is cartoonish villainy. It's hilarious and entertaining cartoonish villainy, but it's cartoonish. Like, Doc Ock doesn't have,
yeah,
that. And even his read that we make fun of on this rewatch of Listen to Me Now doesn't even come a measure of a bad line, over the top line read that Willem Dafoe does. Like, Doc Ock's villainy totally makes sense and fits into this world and doesn't come off as, like, completely insane. And I think it works. And also, as a villain, like, we're talking about that part. I think villains come in various shapes, right? The connection to the hero. I think also in terms of how does a hero physically fight the villain, right? Create that part of it. I think it's better than Green Goblin. I actually think Doc Ock, another reason he's a great Spidey villain, is that he's able to do the type of movements and maneuvers, like being on the side of a building,
that's totally true,
like Spider-Man, without just being like Venom, where it's a carbon copy, right? So many problems with villains is just they're a carbon copy. I think Doc Ock is different enough that it allows for those elements, those flips and those like weird angles that works really well for him and be a great contrast to the hero. So that's another point for why the villain works for me, because there's a lot of levels to it. So for me, and then at the very end, they wanted to set up a tragic, you know, villain for Doc Ock. And it works at the end where he, again, because they pull back this, it's not a huge thing to be like, you were like a son to me and I raised you. It was just like Peter being like, dude, this is what you said. If you honestly believe this, you need to own up to it. All right. And I think that's fair. And I think it works. And it makes sense that it works because he hasn't gone into like a cartoon level of like craziness.
We really have to agree to disagree on the cartoon level of craziness. This guy scales a building after throwing literal bags of money at Spider-Man and is throwing an old woman all over.
That scene is cartoonish, that's for sure.
And is throwing an old woman all over New York City. Like, he's gone from 6 to midnight here. Like, there's no rational brain piece that is getting him to do what he's doing here. The whole scene is massively cartoonish. The whole way in which he's going to engage the subway toward the end of the movie and just like slap people around. Very cartoony.
Except that's still better because like that moment is like Willem Dafoe gets some garbage thrown at him and he has a glider and bombs and someone throws a French fry bag at him and he's just like, oh no, and flies away versus this moment, which I think is great to have people do the stand up thing and be like, get through us. And he's just like, all right, and smashes him, and you're just like, oh yeah, that's why that doesn't work. That's not cartoonish. That's actually more reasonable, real villainy than anything Willem Dafoe does in the original. And if we're talking about actions, of course,
he's monologuing at tentacles multiple times in this movie.
Except they establish the fact that he's at least the tentacles have artificial intelligence that he can hear. So it's not like he's like, there's again a level of crazy, yes, but not a cartoonish level. A cartoonish level.
Is that depiction not cartoonish?
No, because if we had it, if
the depiction of these four tentacles mouthing at him like they're Jim Henson puppets, and him speaking to them,
they don't mouth.
Is not cartoonish.
They don't mouth when they talk to him. They do clanks and stuff.
They don't mouth when they talk to him, but they like do like hissy type faces. They're like basically like they're like, you know, They're making like Stranger Things type faces at him.
And
is that not cartoonish?
Not to the level of anything we saw in the first movie is my point. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, even then, to me, that's not even the cartoonish point.
Yeah, gotta agree to disagree on
it. That's like, we're talking about comic booky at this point too now, where what you're describing is just a comic book villain. And again, the cartoonish is what Willem Dafoe did. That level of over-the-topness is cartoonish. We're going from comic book to Bugs Bunny. There's a difference between a comic book and Bugs freaking Bunny, man. We're on Wile E. Coyote level with Willem Dafoe. And again, love it. I love the over-the-top factor. I think it's hilarious, but it's cartoonish and it's over-the-top. And nothing Doc Ock does hits the level of over-the-topness that Willem Dafoe did.
I think that there is a dryness to the way that Alfred Molina plays Doc Ock that must really work for people who really love that portrayal and love the character. But I think it stands in like a really awkward, weird contrast to the fact that he's talking to tentacles and that he's like running around on the tentacles. And like, I think my point is not that Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin isn't cartoonish. My point is very much that it is cartoonish and he's going for it. Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's in. He knows the role that he's playing. He knows the tone of the movie and he's matching that. And I feel like he does.
I feel like he's way over the tone of the movie. Other people, no one matches the level of the tone he's going for. Like,
yeah, it's because he's doing it the best.
This is it, man. I think it's just that you love the, and I understand it. I think your attachment is very strong to the Willem Dafoe part.
So I love Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin, obviously, but I just think that there is something like, for me, that feels dry and like over, like dry and underbaked doesn't really work together, but I can't say it's like overbaked, but it's somehow dry and underbaked. I'll just stick with it. for the way that Molina plays Doc Ock. I think that it's like a stale performance with a really cartoonish feeling character. And like our definitions of, like, I think we're talking about which is more cartoonish, and I'm totally fine to say that Willem Dafoe is more cartoonish, but to say that like what the movie is doing with Dr. Octopus isn't cartoony as well, I cannot sign off on that piece. I think that it's absolutely cartoony what they're doing with Doc Ock, and I at least appreciate that in the case of what they're doing with Green Goblin. There's an actor who's like matching that, and with Alfred Molina, I don't feel that he is. Like, it's just not, it's not a character that's ever really worked for me in this movie. And like you talked about like other instances of Dr. Octopus, and I think it's a great character, and I think a great Spider-Man villain that has been used to tremendous effect in a lot of different media, whether it's video game or comics or TV shows or whatever. The film adaptation of Doc Ock for me has just never, I don't know. And it's forget connection. It is an entertainment piece.
Well, that's my point. I think that you just really like the over the top.
I think that's an important point. I'm also trying to divine like, not just me, but other people who feel this way. Kevin, we put up a poll, put up a poll today, because I'm genuinely curious of like, am I just an insane person and totally alone in the take that Spider-Man 2 is fine, it's good? Or like, does everyone think it's great and I'm an idiot? And take I'm an idiot as a separate piece. We could dig into that another time. The poll was 54% believe Spider-Man 2 is great, and 39.4% believe Spider-Man 2 is fine. Let's not talk about the 6.6% who say Spider-Man 2 is bad. Kevin, I'm not crazy. I don't think it's bad.
Okay? We're not there.
We're not there. But that's like, you know, it's a significant amount of people who are like, it's good. It's good. And I think that there's
Are you trying to defend this, like, that you were somehow right in this assessment and I was somehow wrong?
No, Kevin, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, why do people feel that way? Because I feel that way, that I think it's good. Because I think the first one's good.
Right.
And I think that this one's good. I don't think either of them are great. I think other movies have come and gone since then that have been great. I think this one's good.
Sure.
And I just don't get the leap from some people from good to the first one to great. Like, I don't feel that. I think that you've articulated very logically and cleanly big reasons to feel that way. But I think that there is a feeling piece of this that is missing for some people, including me. And I do think that lies, as I'm talking it through, like, I think that lies at least somewhat at the feet of entertainment value, which is not an invalid thing to quantify in the case of judging your assessment of a film, especially a blockbuster. I think that this is a much less entertaining villain by leaps and bounds for me in this film.
And that's fine for the entertainment villain part, I guess. Again, you're going to be entertained by it, sure. I do find the argument strange, because if the argument becomes villains acting over the top should therefore always be over the top, sort of crashes a lot of what we just went through in the MCU watch ratings.
No, and I'm not saying that villains should always be over the top. I'm saying that I think that the tone of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies has a hamminess.
Disagree
to
it. On the second that one. I think the tone of the second one is not the tone of the first one. The first one is purposely like really a lot more cheesy, and this villain matches the tone of the film. And I do retain Willem Dafoe doesn't match. He over goes. He is like the Donald Logue in Gotham of this thing, where it's just like, boy, you are in a different show. To be fair, everyone in Gotham is in a different show from the other person in that series and are acting at that level. But it's the same to me. It's the same thing. And I'm never going to convince you, and that's fine. But I do want to point out, as much as you want to be like, hey, you know, 39% of people said that I'm not crazy, that's fine. I want to point out, though, 54% of people, and the actual vote has lied at the end, that is Spider-Man 2 great? The vote says yes. I believe that the results of this election here on Spider-Man 2 has said that has happened.
I appreciate that, and I accept the results. I accept the results.
I did prepare something, knowing that the results were going my way. And the statement I want to say is, I am vindicated. I am right. Oh, I swear I'm right. I swear I knew it all along. That is my statement.
Look, there is no denying that the dashboard
confessional is great.
Yes, there's no denying that the majority of people prefer Dashboard Confessional to Nickelback. There's also no denying that I will still play Nickelback at the end of this podcast, even though it's the Spider-Man 1 theme song, because we're just going to have to play that at the end of every Spider-Man podcast moving forward.
I don't hate it. And
there is no denying that you are solidly in the majority on the Spider-Man 2 opinion. And I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with this being like a... I'm just not... Because, Kevin, I'm not going to watch this movie again for a very long time. It'll be a very long time before I watch the first one, too. I'm okay with this one being a little bit of a miss. I appreciate all of the reasons why it works well for you. And I need to either, like, be good with the feelings that I've got about it or be moved towards your side of the line. And there are ways in which I think that you've really compelled me on that front. Again, like the thematics and the structure and all of that, I think I'm in solid agreement with you on. I think the action, again, just so much better in this one than in the previous. But I think a Spider-Man movie, like how you respond to a villain in a Spider-Man movie is a really important piece of it, more so than in a lot of these other superhero movies that we have talked about over the last several months now that we've been doing Everything is Super. I think that Spider-Man has such a robust rogues gallery that I think that the way that I keep saying connect, and I do think that that's the wrong word, but I think the way that, like, I don't know, the way in which you form a relationship as viewer to character, that is just connecting. It's just connecting. I don't know. The way in which you're connecting to a villain, I think really matters in a Spider-Man movie. And it just doesn't happen for me. And I'd be curious from, like, the people who don't feel this movie too hard, how much is that a Doc Ock thing? I don't think it's as simple as just like I'm in love with Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin.
I think it's a lot of that character, but I do think it's also connected
obviously I love that character, but Alfred Molina as Doc Ock is just not doing it.
Yeah, but I also think, like, you know, not to just say, like, it's just because you're in love with him. I mean, there is a nostalgia factor, I think, for you and for a lot of us that is fair, and I do think carries weight and can warp viewpoints. I have it happen to me a lot. But, like, you know, that we quote...
Wait, you've been the victim of nostalgia goggles before, know, Kevin? Crazy, your opinions right? aren't what? Just wholly objectively right all the time?
No, that part's true. It's just coincidentally that it also aligns with nostalgia. I mean, you know, we quote those lines all the time. Robin laughs a lot about how many times she has heard us say, you know, each one of Willem Dafoe's line. But besides that, I should point out, like, obviously the movie's not perfect, right? Like, there's things that happen in here that are silly. I mean, the bag of gold doubloons that you pointed out, like, what bank has just bags of gold doubloons just lying in a safe is ridiculous. Like, that's absurd. The operating table scene is amazing. It's really good the ending where he does that, like, no, like, that's not good. In terms of things that I legit frustrate me, I think we talk about the Aunt May scene, and I really do love that Aunt May scene. I think it suffers for the Sam Raimi-ism of just going on like 20 seconds too long, where I'm just like, oh shit, she's still talking, we got the point, you can go on, man. But the scene right before that, dude, even watching it now, I hate that cake scene. I really, really hate that scene because it just serves no real purpose. And, like, I don't want to hear that it's like the, oh, it's like you got to appreciate the little things or the kindness of straight. No, nothing about this movie has even set up that part to be a moment of, like, necessity. And it's super weird. It serves no purpose, especially because it's followed by the Aunt May scene, which actually serves the purpose of doing what it needs to do in that moment. So, you know, there's still, I'm sorry. I forgot the biggest thing. If you have thoughts on those two things, by all means, share them before I
steal. No, I hate everything that happens with, like, the neighbor and the landlord. I think it's really dumb.
Yeah.
That stuff feels like deleted scene. You know, it feels like deleted scene material. It feels like this movie could have completely done without all of that. And yeah, not a fan. Not a fan. Deeply so. Really don't care for that stuff at all.
The biggest thing, and we can feel free to talk about this. I think the thing that doesn't hold up, and that's what I said, a product of its time. Holy shit. The Peter and MJ stuff. Like, oh my gosh, especially when they're in the diner. And there's like, there's been a constant with these two of just like, will they, won't they? And I wrote down just like, just effing kill me, Ross and Rachel, because that's going to start to feel like just too much Ross and Rachel-ness, which actually works because of the whole no bra thing, but that's different. But like
the whole Peter and MJ arc in this movie, Kevin, it's certainly, you feel it at the very end of the movie that like, that like this has like, this film suffers from like Return of the King syndrome. Like, just end. Just like, be on the web right now. She now knows officially that you're Spider-Man. Kiss and make up, and let's call it. Let's call it. We don't need to like, she doesn't need to run away from the altar. She doesn't need to come to your house and like have another full thing. You could have just landed there on the web. But I feel like the whole arc is like Return of the Kinging out where they were at the end of the first movie. Just like nothing really moves at all other than like they're just extending out what the next logical point from where she was, where she like gestures at her mouth at the end of the first one. She's like, I'm pretty sure that Peter is Spider-Man. And then like the dialogue in this one, she's like, you know what? I think maybe I always knew. It's like, yeah, no, we know that you always knew. We knew that at the end of the first one. And then somehow along the way in this one, like he started like kind of forgetting. Like it's all just like really, 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 really super drawn out that makes it very hard to watch, where it's like it has such a clear destination. My memory of this movie was that they got together a lot sooner.
No, they don't get together to the end. And you're right. It is a lot of like, I love you, I don't love you, Jesus Christ, just pick a lane here. But it is, again, very much of that time. It is the Ross and Rachel. It is this like thing of just like the back and forth. I do like that at the end of the movie they actually do get together, which is great, cool. On the point of like her knowing he's Spider-Man, yeah, that's like one of those things where it's just like, does she know, does she not know? I mean, he didn't do the Dark Knight to literally just quote a thing she said to Bruce Wayne earlier in the movie, so she knows for sure.
Right.
I actually really liked another reason I think the Aunt May scene works really well.
It's not who you are, Peter. Yeah. It's what you do that defines you.
And Joffrey's just like, I will do things that matter. But anyway, like the Aunt May scene I think works for well, like works really well in that, because like that scene legit, you could just be like, I think Aunt May knows he's Spider-Man, and it's fine. I actually like that, like there's an implication that she kind of knows, but she doesn't like say it, and I think that works really, really well. I think with the MJ stuff, the drawn out, for me it's just the love you don't love you drama of that is so teenagey, but that's the point. It is teenagey, and this was supposed to be for that like demo group, and it works in that regard, that over the topness. But for me now, as much as I'm annoyed by that stuff, the other parts that bug me is the same thing, jumping into what we're talking about, the character of Mary Jane. My God, her and Peter suck. Like Peter Parker wants to, like this girl, see, like the person obviously who you feel saddest for is John Jameson. I'm honestly surprised they did not cast James Marsden in that role as just a really good guy who does not deserve what's happening.
It's a very
to
James
him.
Marsden role, like, for sure.
Holy crap, that poor dude. Like, that sucks. And Mary Jane the entire time, you know, Peter's trying to lure her away to have her cheat on her boyfriend / fiance, and then she leaves him at the altar. Like, that sucks so much. They're like kissing him upside down, so because it's like that part I was just like, ooh, I don't like you as people, I don't like you as human beings right now. Like, that's the other part of that relationship storyline that I really don't like, and I think does not hold up, but is again very much of the time, and is of that, like, you know, WB CWE drama. But like that part, woof, and I think the diner scene was like the roughest. I got to that point, I'm just like, oh my God, please.
Yeah. No, it's it really is a miss, a swing and a miss. It's not good. Kevin, help me. Speaking of swings and misses, can you explain to me why you like Peter losing his power set, and why that's not like super hammy and instead is like a really good piece of the movie?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, the idea how he's losing his powers is never explored. It's never really talked about, but it is a thing that has precedent, right? It's unfortunately comic booky, because it is pulled straight from the comics, and it is pulled from the 90s cartoon that we watched. There was a point where Peter started losing his powers and it was like, whoa, nothing's really wrong with you. Like that happened. And so I like the idea that they linked it to this, the struggle in a way of him not wanting to be Spider-Man, you know, having this internal debate, causing his powers to act very haywire-y. That's not unheard of in comic books. But the reason I think it works really well is because they set up, again, through writing, through action, through showing us in the story, why, if he got to this point, he would be like, yeah, I definitely don't want to do this anymore. And losing his powers is actually a good thing. It ties in to the story arc. It ties into the theme really well and sets up the idea of like, hey, man, you could have this, like your powers are gone. Fine, do your thing. And he's happy for it. But then he does encounter a moment where he can try and be a hero and then realize that like, shit, someone else still did die. How is that sitting with me? How is that feeling with me? I think it works because, again, precedent of the comic. So it's hard to just, do I think like believing in yourself is a problem? Yeah, a little, but that's also comics. And that's also like TV. Again, this movie does not have a perfect score for me. Close, but not quite. But I think, again, thematically, it works. It fits into the narrative that they're doing. It actually like makes sense for the character journey. Like, so it's not hammy in that regard. Like, I can't even think of a comparison in the first movie because there is no character journey in the first one. But it works here. It fits. It makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's fine. I think it's fine. I think it's all right. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to get into some feedback when we come back. Hang tight. Stay on that wall. Stick around. You're amazing. We'll be back in a second. All right. And we're back. Kevin, we've talked a lot. Let's give voice to some of the Everything is Super listenership, some reviews from folks who have written in, you know, and it ranges. There's people who liked it, people who didn't like it. An example, I think, of didn't like it. This is Brian. I don't understand the love of this movie. It should be called Peter Parker 2 because there's no Spider-Man in it until the very end. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah,
personally,
they're the same person. It's the point of the movie in superheroes.
This is from Fitz, who says, brilliant but lazy. That quote from Otto kind of sums it up. It really drags more in the first 45 minutes than I remember. Everything post the Octavius lab scene hums pretty well along, though. There's just some rough spots in this, especially the dialogue between Peter and Mary Jane. It hasn't improved between movies. Octavius defeating himself instead of Peter beating him is a nice twist. I agree with all of that. This is, again, from Riley, who loves Spider-Man 1, and we read a big chunk of what Riley had to say last week. Let's do it again here. Riley writes in, I have that same nostalgia baked into this movie as the first. I still just find this movie an absolute blast and enjoy every single moment of it. I think one thing this movie does really well is show my favorite phase of Peter Parker's life, the college years, while he's struggling financially, down on his luck, poor, and struggling with all his friends and his family. I know a lot of people have love for high school Peter, and I do too, don't get me wrong. I love Ultimate Spider-Man as much as the next guy, but I still think my favorite Peter stories are when he's an adult struggling with the burden of being Spider-Man. I love how quippy Spider-Man and how much fun Peter has as Spider-Man, but it also puts an insane amount of stress on his life. He can't hold down a job. He can't make it to a play one single time. He can't pay his rent. His friends think he's a flake or close with the man they think killed his father. Peter loves being Spider-Man, but being Spider-Man also sucks for his life. It feels so real and so relatable to me that trying to do the right thing, but you still screw up, is so human, so Peter Parker. You can see the weight that being Spider-Man puts on him, the burden on his mind and heart, and Tobey Maguire plays it excellently, especially in his confession scene with Aunt May, which is heartbreaking. I love how emotional this movie is, how much it delves into Peter rather than Spider-Man. His struggle with being Spider-Man, his Spider-Man No More moment, makes his return to the costume more impactful and powerful and important, and makes the ending, Peter fully embracing being Spider-Man with MJ, even more impactful. And can we talk about how excellent Dr. Octopus was? I mean, he is such a good, tragic villain. And Alfred Molina plays him perfectly and is clearly having so much fun. His ending is absolutely perfect to me as well, and the way they use him for Peter's arc throughout the film is perfect to me. And the horror in his wife's death and in the birth of Dr. Octopus at the operating table, peak Raimi right there.
So that is Riley with a lot of love for Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of it.
that I used my voice to bring to life. So how about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Riley on it. I think a lot of it works. I think that, again, the power of Spider-Man originally was the fact that there isn't no Spider-Man and isn't no Peter Parker. They are the one and the same. And the focus of these stories are on that and the struggle of the character. I mean, I think, you know, people talk about The Dark Knight as like the best Batman movie, best superhero movie. That movie did not have a ton of Batman in it because the movie isn't always about the presence of the character. It's about the effect of the person and how he changes and shapes the world around him. And that movie does that very effectively. It's called The Dark Knight, and we see the effect of what The Dark Knight has done to Gotham and his people. And I think it's the same thing here. The movie is about Spider-Man, and Peter Parker is Spider-Man. So really reflected throughout. And I think,
the movie is Spider-Man 2, and it's about people other than Spider-Man 2.
Get out.
Out, am I?
Jerk.
Hey, we forgot to do this last week. Organic web shooters versus science-y web shooters. You like the organic?
I do like the organic web shooter. Are you like science-y web shooters?
I'm not like massively against the organic web shooters. I think that I think Peter Parker, boy genius, making his web shooters, I think is cool.
Yeah.
I think if gun to my head, that's the one I would pick.
Sure. I mean, my biggest problem with the, you know, the science web shooters and why I like organic is Peter Parker's allowed to
be. I think that the organics would really hurt. Like, where are they coming from?
Does it hurt when you shoot your web?
Every time. Every time, you know, and he doesn't even have a healing factor to rebound from that. Like, I feel like that would hurt. Like, if you're like, you're shooting the building and then you're swinging from it and the force of that.
Well,
like,
it comes, it,
like,
it came.
Wouldn't
it,
there be like some sort of like bone it, like, vein
cuts
deep
off. It,
thing
it, like, cuts would, off after it sticks and then he holds it. It's not like in his wrist still. I think the main reason I think organic is fine is because, like, again, for these things, we don't have to go into the weird details about, like, how does this power work? What's the science behind him having organic? Like, who cares? That's not the point of the superhero stories. How does a red sun affect anything? What does that matter? Why does he have powers like that if he's on a yellow anyway? So, like, it doesn't matter. But the reason I think it's better than the science web shooters is for the simple reason that it's would be insane to me to have the idea that Peter Parker is poor and struggling if he has developed a non-lethal way to apprehend criminals. Are you kidding me? Pen and sell it. Like, that's insane to me. You want to do good? Start there. It's the same thing with Batman, where it's just like, oh, Batman's great. Bruce Wayne has how much money? Invested in infrastructure, you asshole. So it's the same thing. Like, the science part of it is just like, why doesn't, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, he's that smart. Just patent and sell that. Like, give that to the police. Give it to other people. Like, a non-lethal way to actually apprehend people and to stop things. That's extremely important technology, and like, he's irresponsible for just keeping it to himself to be Spider-Man. So, like, that's my problem. Yeah. It's the same thing close to like the Doc Ock in this, where it's just like the whole movie is like, oh yes, this fusion technology, and like, oh, that's wild. And then at the end,
I do love that scene where they're like, oh, fusion technology, oh, sweet tentacles, right? And it's like, can we talk more about your tentacle
right?
thing?
Like, why isn't that, like, that is a thing, dude. You like, and which is actually, again, ties into the game. I keep going back to it, but I think it works really well that, like, the tentacles were developed at like, that is his science experiment, because he's trying to find a way to help people who have lost their limbs regain, you know, movement. And, like, that's great. Why is that not what you're showing off? Like, so, you know, it's a similar thing there. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand why people are so against organic web shooters. And if it gets into the detail of, like, how does it work? I'm just like, that can't be an argument for superhero stuff. Like, certainly not that. There's a lot crazier things in a superhero world that I can nitpick on. But, like, that's minuscule, guys.
I just worry that it would be painful.
Every time.
Every time. Every
Can you imagine
time.
Spider-Man as Wolverine, just like the grumpiest jerk?
All right, let's take this from Professor Strunk. I heard a rumor we may hear from Professor Strunk in greater detail at some point in the near future. Professor Strunk writes in and says, one thing that strunk me on this rewatch is just how much horror aesthetic Raimi brought into it, especially in the Doc Ock surgery scene. It makes me look forward to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness all the more. Yeah, so Sam Raimi's directing Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, as we've said, and We talk about the Doctor Strange call out in this movie. Are there like Raimiisms from this film that like you would particularly like to see employed for a Doctor Strange film? Like, is there like, I don't know, sling ring vision? I don't know what like the point of view, like camera stuff would be as it pertains to Doctor Strange.
It would be weird, right? Like, I'm curious to see.
Very obvious. It's the cloak.
Oh, yeah. But that was more Bruce Campbell acting that, right? Like, then you're talking about like the hand scene specifically from Evil Dead or.
Yeah, I think like doing that with the cloak and really like embodying the cloak as a character, yeah, to the point of like hiring Bruce Campbell to do like hand stuff with the cloak, and like put him in a green screen suit and have him just like running around with the cloak. He does love to, you gotta expect that Bruce Campbell's gonna appear in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse.
I mean, that'd be pretty fun. He'll appear as yet another character in the string of characters he played. Did you ever hear about that? There's like a fan theory that went around that I think has been dismissed, which is, you know, unfortunate, that that Bruce Campbell could have been Mysterio.
And you know what, I really would like to see.
I mean, I'm into that. To be honest, I'm very into that.
I would really love to see everybody involved in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man franchise and Sony. I'd be really up for seeing them like figure out how to get all this back together and like do some more of this. And I know that that doesn't seem like the take that I would have, because like here I am being like Spider-Man 2, like I like it. But I think it would be fun. I think it would be a fun contrast to what you're getting in the MCU. And I would be curious to see how all of these people have aged, both like in terms of like actual like character life, like how have things shifted there, but also like how everyone has evolved as filmmakers and actors.
Has less hair, as we have established now, is how he has aged. But we didn't talk about that. But again, like, holy crap.
He's great.
Every line out of his mouth in this is great. The one where he's just like, "Aw, Betty, get me a violin." Like, that was his moment of reflection about how it is.
Firing and unfiring Peter every 5 seconds is really
like,
good.
He was really good in the first one. I think it has his best character moment in the first one. But even this is a different type of character moment for him, where he has that reflection, you know, self-reflection scene. And then immediately is just like, he's a thief. Like, it's just so spot on. Like,
call the caterer, tell them not to open the caviar is really good.
He's so good in this role, which is the exact reason they had to bring him back for
Far From Home. There's no one else. All right. Dow and Cervo says, the hero in all of us scene sums up exactly who Spider-Man is. Do you feel that, Kevin? Do you feel like this movie does a good job of like doing that? Like, Spider-Man, we could all... any one of us could wear the mask. Do you think Spider-Man 2 makes that argument? Does it sell it?
I don't think it makes that argument. I mean, there's another movie that makes that argument real well, which we'll get to. But I don't think it makes the argument that anyone could be under the mask, but I think it makes the argument that anyone can relate to the person under the mask, I guess, is what this movie does really well. I think, you know, Spider-Man is being a hero and like the struggle he has to go through, I think, is super relatable. They do a good job of like that hero and all of us type thing. But I think it is very Peter Parker centric into it and like the struggle he has to go through. But I don't think it's like anyone can wear the mask. That's an entirely different movie, an entirely different theme, and explored really well and done really well in another film. I'm really excited to get to. But boy, do we have to go through some shit before we get to that.
We got a whole other Spider-Man 2 that we're gonna have to get.
Through some garbage.
Yeah. Oh my god. All right. How about New York moments in this one, Kevin?
I really want to like. Okay, so there's a couple of things. I think
so. The Joe's Pizza, because we start there.
Opening
right?
there, like right there. Yeah. I think is insane. Right. Like, I think what is it? We're 42 blocks in 7.5 minutes. That's one insane. Like, on a scooter,
And like, you may as well just fire this guy already, because he's not going to.
But also,
make
delivery zones. Like, why would you have that guarantee in New York City? Like, I hope there's another Joe's Pizza. Like, it's outside of delivery zone. Like, places are just going to be outside of delivery zones. So it's crazy that part exists. I will say though, a New York moment that I think is kind of spot on is right as that's happening. That one guy who's just like, "Whoa, you sold that guy's pizza," I think is pretty great. So
that's great. I enjoy that as well. Joe's Pizza. There is a Joe's Pizza in the West Village that is like the Joe's Pizza. And many people describe it as the quintessential New York City pizza.
Oh, man.
Is Joe's Pizza. And much like Spider-Man 2, I guess I just don't get it. I think it's good that Joe's Pizza. This is definitely not that Joe's Pizza is the Joe's Pizza that's featured in this.
The Joe's Pizza that's
featured in this. It's, you know, it's still, have you watched Evil at all?
No.
The show? No. He's one of the main characters on that show. That show is awesome. Extremely your
Evil,
shit.
Evil, though,
Kevin.
But...
Yeah, dude. Trust me. Give it a shot. It's on Netflix. Give it a whirl. I think you'd like it a lot.
I made fun of the trailers for that a lot, though, when it was happening.
Oh, we're totally worth making fun of the trailers. and the expectation is that it's going to be just totally okay. It's like one of the better network shows that I have encountered in many, many, many years. Not the least of which is because it has Michael Emerson playing a character that makes Benjamin Linus look like a pretty good dude. He plays a really disgusting, weird character. Anyway, we're talking about a totally different thing. Check out Evil. I recommend it. I think like you should at least give it like an episode or two to see if it might be your thing, because it's like very much in the Fringe mold. You would like
that,
I think you'd like
that
it.
Actually, Michael Emerson reminds me of another moment that I think could be a very New York moment.
Michael Emerson, by the way, would be an incredible Dr. Octopus.
I mean, Michael Emerson would be probably incredible at most roles. He's real good.
Most Spider-Man villains. He'd be a killer rhino.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine him in that suit?
Yeah, I'm picturing it right now.
I don't know,
now,
I don't know
fun.
If it's worse than Paul Giamatti, but we'll find out.
Paul Giamatti was great casting for Rhino, by the way. They just totally biffed it. Anyway,
along with other things. But the, so I think a really silly moment, but could be a very New York moment, is if Hal Sparks was playing Hal Sparks. If that legit was just Hal Sparks with his dog and was getting the elevator and had that awkward interaction, very New York moment. And I'd say Michael Emerson, because I used to see Michael Emerson walking his dogs constantly.
Me too!
Constantly. Yeah. And it was just such a New York thing to be like, oh yeah, there he is.
Michael Emerson is a super New Yorker, and sometimes you would just see him.
Yeah,
you
know? Especially where I used to work at DC, there was a Chipotle there, and he'd always be walking his dogs around that area.
Yes, yeah, he loves to like walk his dog around Times Square. Like, if you're in New York and you're in the Times Square area, just spend a full day there. You'll probably see Michael Emerson walking his dog.
There was a point where I saw him and I was with a friend, and I definitely was just like, oh, it's him. And as we were walking by, I just went to my friend and I was just like, hey, you ever seen the show Lost? And I just saw him. I just saw him look up and look at me and just give a smirk. And I was just like, delightful, great. Delightful. So
having interviewed him, he's a really nice guy. So I'm sure he loved that.
Yeah. So that to me, like, they don't confirm it, but I do think if that's Hal Sparks, it's a very New York moment, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, one of the top New York moments in these movies so far.
Yeah. What else do I got down here? I mean, those are the main ones I think that I wrote down as like...
What about the subway scene? Yeah, the train
scene.
So
let's get to that. Like,
you know, we could get into the geography of
which
it.
Which is like, not I guess, a like, New York hot, moment. The, where is know, that the, train? The, where what is where are we? What's going on here?
Is that not what gets turned into the High Line Park?
Is it? That train line?
I think maybe, I don't know. I got to admit that I wasn't studying it super closely this time around. So I wasn't paying like razor sharp attention to it. I think that's just always been like my headcanon, is that's what becomes the High Line Park.
I guess I'd have to see where he is, because that's way further west, right?
West. Yeah. 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 That's like right on the basically the West Side Highway.
Did you see, I had to just do my cardinal directions in my head.
I watched it. I saw you do it. This resonated with me a bit more right now. This idea of like, this guy's a hero for wearing the mask. We're gonna like rally around the guy wearing the mask right now. Was rather resonant at this moment in time. And this idea of like, I'm very proud of my city. And I am most of the time anyway. But I'm really proud of my city right now. And this idea of all these New Yorkers like rallying around Spider-Man, it got me more in the feels than it usually does. Usually I think that this is just super, super cheese. And it's definitely still cheese. But I don't know. It kind of spoke to me more in the moment that I'm meeting the movie right
it
now.
It does. I will say, I mean, I want to talk about the train in a broader context, too. Like, before I even get to that specific moment, you know, I actually wrote down the train scene is so good, ... until it isn't. But, like, the train scene is great. Like, that fight, holy hell, that's really good. I mean, that's the epitome of what I was talking about, right? Like the matching of being able to like go on the sides of the train car and the buildings, like it's really, really well executed. Like we talked about the action, and I think to me, this is the level of that final fight in Spider-Man 1 almost. I think, you know, it doesn't quite get there. I think in the physicality of Spider-Man and his villains, it definitely gets there, but I don't think it gets into the, like the grittiness of that original one. But it's incredibly well done. So I love that. I think so. Oh man. Robin, you know, complained and said that I just have a like almost like a cold heart where she's like, some people like sentimental, and I do like sentimental. I think my problems with it are so minuscule, especially now. I think it works a lot better now. My biggest issues are, let's start with one, the mask coming off. They shouldn't have done that. I know that like you got the actor, you want to show his face, but that moment has also been mocked and memed so much where he's like holding the train car and he just has not a good expression with his mouth. Face.
Yeah. Like, I'm so glad that it happened.
Well, I guess for the internet and the memeing, yeah, it's great. But like, yeah, it's a,
that's the priority.
It unfortunately just really, really undercut a really great, powerful moment. And I think what's really frustrating is that they could have accomplished that scene with the mask on. Like, if he had his mask on, it's fine. It still would have worked really well. And which leads me to, because the mask is off, they take him into the car, and there's two things that happen. The biggest issue, and this I still don't like. I still hate this part of it. It's picking out one line, but it's still going to, I'm going to pick it out. He's just a kid. No, he's just a kid. He is the same age as you. That is a 30-year-old man. Like, you cut to that dude and back to him. And I'm like, you're the same age. Like, it just doesn't work when he's just like,
he's just a kid.
If it was Tom Holland, yeah, that line works really, really well. But it just doesn't work with 30-year-old Tobey Maguire in that role.
Yeah, we're supposed to believe, though, that he's just a kid, I guess.
You have this thing where the mask is off and there's the, like, we won't tell anyone. Who and what are you going to tell people? Who, do you all recognize this pizza delivery guy? Has he delivered your pizzas? Like, this happens sometimes and it just doesn't make sense to me.
And what would they say? Spider-Man's a white guy.
Yeah, Spider-Man's a white guy with brown hair. Find him in New York. Like, what? Like, no. It's nonsensical. My favorite subversion of this moment, by the way, was in the Justice League animated series, which is incredible. And this is specifically part of Justice League Unlimited. Lex Luthor switched bodies with the Flash. And so he's as a Flash and he's looking in a mirror and he's just like, well, at least I'll finally know who you are. And he takes off his mask and he just stops for a moment and just goes, I have no idea who this is. Because why would he? Like, if it was Bruce Wayne under the mask, you could be like, whoa, shit, that's Bruce Wayne. Even Clark Kent, you could maybe be like, is that Dilly, the reporter guy, Clark Kent? Like, maybe. Pizza delivery boy Peter Parker? No. So, like, again, that part, silly as hell. I get the intent, and the intent of the, like, we won't tell anyone, we understand. I do think it's sentimental. I do think worked. But you could also, again, do the entire scene where his mask was on. You eliminate the weird face he makes when he's stopping the train. You still have them carrying him inside. And you can have them be like, have someone like reach for the mask and have the rest of them be like, no, we shouldn't do that. And I think it still works. I think the powerful moment, better than the first one, of them standing up to Doc Ock really works. I think that feels more genuine than like mess with all of us, you know, that nonsense. Like, I think it works. Like, you have to get through all of us. And I love, again, as I mentioned, the moment of like, all right. And he just does, because that's what would happen. I love that idea too, because it actually also makes the villain villainous and like a threat. Like, you can't just gang up on a supervillain. That doesn't work, guys. And I like that. I like that idea that it does come down to Spider-Man having to face this guy because he's the only one. That guy can beat the crap out of an entire trainload of New Yorkers. So the scene does really work for me, except for like the minor things. The Tobey Maguire face, God.
Yeah, I love it. I love the Toby face. Toby face is the best part. That's the movie. That's the movie for me. Like, that's the type of stuff that's in here that I think, like, I can't shake that stuff. So, like, it's hard to, like, get past Toby faces to, like, really get to, like, the really deep character stuff that I totally agree exists. I think there's just some barrier to entry that might be harder for some than for others.
You're reminding me a lot of a mutual friend right now that we'll talk about afterwards.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
I apologize. Listen, I'm happy for you and everyone else. I'm sad for me. I would rather be on your side of the line. All right, let's rank the movie. So I'll give it a 0 at... I'm not crazy. I think like a lot of it is still just like kind of like a feel thing. Like, I'm not a lunatic. I know this is a good movie, but I think it's a good movie. I think it's a good movie in the way that the first one's a good movie, and the first one has a nostalgia bump for me. And I also think that like this movie is definitely deeper. I think you're totally right that it's smarter. I think that the first one is for me decidedly more entertaining. I think that it's more fun, the first one. And I think that can matter, especially when it comes to like execution on that stuff. And I think it executes the entertainment quality and the fun factor in the first one for me at a higher level than like the deepness is being executed here on Spider-Man 2. So if all things were being equal, I would probably give them both like basically the same exact score of 4. Spider-Man 1 gets that 0.5 nostalgia bump for me, and I'm just going to keep Spider-Man 2 at a 4. I'm sorry. I wish I could go higher than that, but I think that that's probably even higher than like I felt earlier in the day. So that's where I'm going to land.
Well, Kevin. I mean, just know that you're very wrong, and
that's fine. That's fine.
Unbelievable.
That's fine.
But I definitely gave this movie pretty high, honestly high for myself. But like I said, I do think
you gave. So I'm going to spoil it. You gave this movie a 5.5.
I did. I gave it a 5.5,
which is really high for you, I feel like. So that's so just like to map it to some of the Marvel Cinematic Universe
can't do that.
Movies.
That's a whole different ballgame here. That's what we kind of stated, that like we're looking at these in the vacuum of Spider-Man films. And I think compared to the other Spider-Man films, we can talk about that. But the same rating as one of the MCU films is nuts.
Let me ask you. So you're giving this movie a 5.5, and we're ranking those. We've already ranked those first two Spider-Man movies from the MCU. So those are already ranked, and that's part of our accounting here. So I'm certainly ranking it on that same graded scale. So like for me, like I'm giving 4s out of 6s. To these Spider-Man movies in the same way that like I would give Captain America the First Avenger of a 5 out of 6 is what I gave that. You gave Captain America the First Avenger a 4.6 out of 6. Mm-hmm. So you're almost like a full point higher here on Spider-Man 2. Does that map for you? That all holds? I'm just trying to like stress test.
No, because I cannot compare this to the other MCU films. If we were mapping this to MCU, this would probably fall higher than Captain America: The First Avenger, but not anywhere near where it is now. If that was the case, Spider-Man 1, again, if we're mapping this to the MCU, Spider-Man, I got bad news about Spider-Man 1. Spider-Man 2 fares better.
That's fine.
3 and the rest of them are going to be real trouble. But
I would think that that's what we're doing here. So we might be grading this a little differently.
No, I think we established in the first one that I even said I'm mapping it to the Spider-Man films, or else these scores are going to be real, real low, dude.
Well, maybe that gives you some context for where I'm coming from with Spider-Man 2, that I'm giving it a 4 out of 6, which is not far away from, it's the exact score that I gave Avengers Age of Ultron. It's really close to what I gave the Ant-Man movies. I like the Ant-Man movies more than I like Spider-Man 2. I don't think it's that crazy.
It's pretty crazy.
I really don't. You know, I like Captain Marvel more than this. I give that a 4.5. I don't think that that's a crazy take.
And yeah, you were also comparing, like, again, another reason I think this doesn't work is comparing it to a lot of these modern films and how they've changed in shapes. And my main thing, I will say, the things that don't hold up is, like I said, I think it doesn't hold up because of its time, but I am subtracting points to an extent because of that. And it gets a 5.5 for me. I'm not comparing it to the MCU films. That's crazy. If we were doing that, I would change my score from Spider-Man 1 to really low. And this one maybe bumped down a little bit more. And then the rest of them are going to be atrociously bad. Like, it's just, that's like apples and oranges comparisons. And I think to do virtue to the Spider-Man films, I'm grading it within the realm of the Spider-Verse, if you will. And I do think this is
so. Then in that context, then Kevin, you're giving this a 5.5. You gave Spider-Man Far From Home a 5.
Yes, yes.
And so you stand by that.
I do. I really, really loved Spider-Man Far From Home. There's a lot of praise about it. I think it works really well doing a modern type of Spider-Man story, right? Like adapting Spider-Man that we knew into a modern day story. It excels at it. It's not as good as Homecoming. But again, I think this movie also, as I said, like about Spider-Man 1, is an encapsulation of a type of Spider-Man. And I think when you look at it that way, this movie, as a representation of the Spider-Man that was established in the time period of comics, and especially in the 90s even, this is that guy. Like, it does an incredible job of doing that. It's such a perfect representation, almost perfect representation, of what Spider-Man was during that time period. And so for me, it gets that rating for that reason, because I'm looking at it as a Spider-Man movie as well. And I think Far From Home, again, does a great job updating Spider-Man for the modern era. I think it's great. I think Tom Holland is phenomenal. I love Mysterio in it. But is it as Spider-Man-y as this movie, even though it's a different type of Spider-Man? I don't think so.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to put Spider-Man 2, though, behind Homecoming and Far From Home, but decidedly ahead of the first Spider-Man. And again, like, I think that that's like objectively right. You know, personal tastes will vary. And speaking of personal tastes varying, as we're getting into the villain rankings, I'm giving Dr. Octopus a 4. And I know that's really low for a lot
of
people.
Didn't you give Norman Osborn a 6?
Yeah, okay. I did. Okay. And I know that this is like
just stating that
really,
for the
really
record
low.
For everyone listening to this one and missed the first one.
100%. 100%. I know it's really low. And I'll also say that I'm only rating him at a 4 out of deference to the idea that people really love Doc Ock. Doesn't really do it for me. It never has. Didn't change this time around either.
Yeah, I gave Doc Ock a 5. I think, again, it works really well. If I'm not mistaken, didn't I give Green Goblin the same score?
You've given a 5 to Green Goblin as well as Mysterio.
Okay, yeah. And I put Doc Ock to that level, certainly the level of Green Goblin. So for me, that tracks. He's not a perfect villain. Again, he's not going to get a full 6. The only one that has a full 6 for me so far is Vulture, because I think he just works.
That changes next week when Topher Grace shows up.
Well, there's 3 villains we got to write next week. Woohoo!
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
what a movie!
Yeah.
Well, it's called Spider-Man 3. It's because Spider-Man has 3 villains.
Actually, you know that one side note I thought was really funny. Talking about like modern movie versus a movie of the time. The Harry scene where Willem Dafoe shows up and stuff, and he like finds out, totally would have been a post-credit scene today. Like that feels like so weird where it's placed. But I absolutely get why it's placed there now, as opposed to like. Or when it was then versus now, because like
that's after the credits have finished, or that's like mid credits by MCU standards,
and then you have some kind of like jokey Spider-Man moment as the post credit. So yeah, I just thought that was really funny. Speaking of the villains, we'll be seeing in the next one. Good God,
yeah. So you gave him a 5. Audience is higher than you, and certainly higher than me, 5.18, and that's significantly higher than they are in Green Goblin. You know, I'm definitely pushing the needle with my 6 on Green Goblin. I'm inflicting my will upon these rankings, I think. So Doc Ock is in 4th place, and I think that people who are not thrilled about that, I apologize. I'm sorry. I wish it was different. It's not. The Spider-Man suit ranking, Kevin. So last week, you gave the suit a 4.5. I see that you're giving this one a 5.5. To me, they looked exactly the same. How is it different?
Subtle differences. Maybe this is just because, like, I've just been immersed into the world of design because of my job and stuff. But the color, like, my big problem with the first suit was the silver, which really popped and made it shiny in parts. They downplayed the silver and has more of a muted tone to it. It's not black, but it's almost there, so it's a lot darker. And I think that meshes and blends way better with the spider symbol on his chest. So because of that, the it's not as like shiny and like kind of like distracting as the one in the first one. And I think that darker look actually works a lot better, not only than that suit, but then a lot of suits that we have seen. I don't think it's as good as like the first Spider-Man suit. I think it's like better than the ones we have seen. I think I was honestly surprised by how much I liked this one, because I expected this to be exactly the same. But the muted colors, I think, really, really worked. To make this suit kind of stand out in a great way.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that. It looked really similar to me, so I just kept it the same score, which I liked the suit a lot.
So 4.5 is what I gave it.
It's like the lips. So I can't see the lips you keep telling me to see.
I know.
You can't see the colors that I keep telling you to see.
It's so funny. So we're still in the process of like averaging out our Toby rankings. We're both higher on Toby in this movie than we were last time around by a half point each. So we're both a 5 and 5 on Toby.
Yeah, I think. But I like his gooberisms. Yeah,
I think in this movie it worked. It wasn't so over the top. The only times I thought it was too much was when he started reciting. So stupid. Oh my god. I don't get secondhand embarrassment often. Like, I love The Office, but like this was like Scott's Tots level of just like, oh no, like it was just so bad. And I was just like, oh, you goddamn man. Goober. That and the hilltop thing. Like, what a weirdo. Like, I feel like I came close to, or I may have said similar, like, trash as, like, the hilltop thing. And I look back at that song for me, and I was like, whoa, you need a restraining order, you psychopath. And so, like, it was too much for me. Like, those two scenes specifically.
Nah, I love it. But that's the tone for me. Like, that's the sweet spot for these movies, I think, is, like, leaning into that.
And you're allowed to have a little bit. And I think they had the right amount in this one. I don't think it was an excessive amount.
I wish there was more.
We're going to see a comparison. We're going to see, like, where this did the Peter Gets His Groove Back, and it worked really well, in my opinion, in this movie. And we're going to see a similar scene in the next one, and it's real bad.
What if I walk away from Spider-Man 3 with the take that it's better than Spider-Man 2? Does the rest of the podcast series get canceled?
I think it does. I think just my respect of you is already low, as you know, but I think the audience respect would be gone.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think we're in danger of that, by the way. I think I'm in constant danger of losing the respect of my dear listeners, but I don't think it'll be for my Spider-Man 3 takes.
It's you know what is sad though, like,
but I'm excited. I haven't watched it in forever, man. I haven't seen it in so long.
I saw 10 minutes of it relatively recently and said nope and then turned away.
Oh, I can't wait.
I did the same thing with Batman and Robin. I tried watching like 10 minutes in the middle and I was just like, woo. And I had to go, but now I'm doing it. I'm doing it by heavy choice. But you know what is that something we didn't hit on for this? Speaking of like, again, villains and everything, and that Peter Gets His Groove Back scene. Dylan Baker as the Lizard, I feel that sucks. We never got that
short
because I really,
yes, I agree.
Really wish that happened.
I think what especially sucks is then like, so Spider-Man 4 doesn't happen for a lot of reasons, and then they reboot it with Amazing Spider-Man, and they reboot it with the Lizard as the first bad guy. It's like, oh, that's so shitty. That's so unfair to Dylan Baker. Dylan Baker's an actor's actor. Yep. You know, like give that man a reptilian makeover. He wants it. He wants
deserved
it, so
it.
Bad.
We all deserved it.
I think it would be great for him to be one of, if there is like massive crossover back into like the Sony side of things, justice for Dylan Baker for sure. How old is Dylan Baker?
Probably pretty old. At least 20 years older.
You know,
I guess 16 years older.
He's 61. I think he could be a 61-year-old Lizard. Why not?
I mean, if they get Tobey Maguire back, I mean,
that'd be crazy. Oh God, I want it. I want it bad.
Just have him be like Dark Knight Return. Style Spider-Man.
Oh, man.
That's where you're going to have imagine? Doesn't hurt every time.
Oh, my God. And can you imagine Toby trying to deliver that with, like, gravitas? I want that attempt so badly. Very, very badly. I want them to try. Spider-Man 3. We're going to get a darker Spider-Man.
Are we?
Yeah, he's edgy. He's bad. We're going to get that. We're getting an edgy and bad Spider-Man. Coming up next week, whether or not it's the grizzled Dark Knight Returns version, don't think so. But we're getting an angry Spidey next
week.
We're
not getting an angry. Getting an angry Spidey. More than anything, we're getting a dancey Spidey. I remember
loves to
off
dance.
The top of my head, there are, I think, 3 songs and 2 dance sequences in this film, which
I can't.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great. So Spider-Man 3. It's coming your way next week. Get your feedback in super@postshowrecaps.com, or you can talk to us on the Discord as well. If you are a member of the Post Show Recaps Patreon at the Discord level, consider it. Check it out. patreon.com/postshowrecaps.
recaps. Follow Kevin. He's on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. The two of us are podcasting about Mando, Star Wars, The Mandalorian each and every week alongside LaTanya Starks. Here on Post Show Recaps, if you're not listening to that podcast, I recommend you do. We're having a great time. We hope everyone who is celebrating is having a happy and very safe holiday. We hope that if you are not getting your fill of family fights this year, that Kevin and I, our bickering sufficed for for those purposes, Kevin. Even when we disagree, maybe even sometimes, especially when we disagree, I always love getting into it with you. So this is
I held myself back every single, a lot, Josh. I hope you appreciate that.
doing this each and every single week is such a joy. So I'm glad that we get.
And don't stick your fingers into any pies or apple cobbler or whatever it was in Normandy during that Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's going for the sweet potato pie is what he was after, and hard to blame him. So delicious. We'll be back with another delicious podcast next week. Until then, let's throw it to Nickelback. A hero can save us. I'm not gonna stand.